Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locking in for episode 189 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head out to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. You can see all my Thunder coverage there. I'm on every day of the week, Monday through Friday, just as all the Locked On podcasts are on. And if you want to check out Locked On Celtics, you can see that and learn about their playoff series, Locked On Bulls, Locked On whichever team you want to see. We got that for all NBA and a bunch of NFL ones as well. I'm sitting here in the corridors of Toyota Center, once again recording with my buddy Matt Tynan from Real GM after the Thunder just fell to the Rockets, 115 to 111. Down 2-0 in the series right now. They had a 15-point lead, and they couldn't hold on to it.
Yeah. They looked better from the start. Even though that first half in game one was, you know, fine. They were within, I think, five at halftime or something like that. The Thunder looked like, at least tonight, they looked like the better team for at least three quarters. They changed up their schemes a little bit, did some different things that the Rockets were having a few issues dealing with. Overall, I thought they looked really good, but everything sort of fell apart in the fourth quarter, and a lot of that was the 4 of 18 shooting from Russell Westbrook. It looked – you never know if a guy's tired, so you don't want to call him tired, but something was off. It looked like some shots were being forced. It looked – I think Billy Donovan said it after the game. They need to – or one of the Thunder folks said they just need to keep moving the ball, and that stopped. The ball movement stopped. We looked at the usage percentage. Russell Westbrook's usage percentage in the fourth quarter was 66%. That's pretty damn high.
It was crazy to watch. He was great in the first three quarters. The Thunder are leading 86-74 with 2 minutes and 21 seconds left in the third quarter, and Westbrook subs out. They're leading 12 at that point. Mm-hmm. Houston goes on a huge run. Donovan puts in Westbrook at the start of the third, at the start of the fourth quarter with an 89-86 Thunder. Thunder go on a little, get a couple of buckets there, but they give up the lead pretty quickly, and that's with Harden off. Westbrook on Harden off is a situation where they kind of have to dominate. They have to extend a three-point lead, and they didn't do it. I think that's kind of the scenario. The Rockets actually took the lead there. It was the first lead they had the entire game because the Thunder were leading big time early. It was like 16-4.
Yeah,
early in the
game. The lead. Let's see. I mean, the biggest lead was 15 points for the Thunder.
Right, so, and that was in the first quarter. Yeah. They led by 15, so they got out to the gates. They got out to the run. Got out of the gate. Out of the gate. There we go.
Yeah, that works.
They got out of the gate. Yeah, they got out of the gate real quickly, and they were up 15 early. And Westbrook was great in the first three quarters. He was great offensively in the first three quarters. He was fantastic. He was attacking. He was getting to the rim. He was finishing there. He was getting to the line. He was finding guys. He was, you know, in his own way, he was moving the ball. He was he started 13 of 23 from the game. He finished,
which is great for him. I mean, that's a great percentage.
Yeah, it's a great percentage for anyone.
For anybody, yeah.
Yeah,
for sure.
He started 13 of 23. He finished the game 4 for his last 20, 4 for 18 in the fourth quarter. We'll read his line. It's such a weird way to evaluate. So he had 51 points, 10 rebounds, and 13 assists. 4 steals,
which is crazy,
and only 4 turnovers, which is not a lot considering how much he handles the ball and below his season average. But he's the first player ever to have a 50-point triple-double in the postseason.
Yep.
But it feels weird talking about it. So to me...
Well, because the 17 of 43, maybe he had 4 turnovers, but a lot of those shots were essentially turnovers.
Right.
I mean, obviously not like a live ball turnover going the other way, but some of those shots, man, obviously forced... and he was so, you're right, like he was efficient and disciplined and in control of himself for so much of the game early on. He was taking advantage of everything the Rockets were allowing the Thunder to get. He wasn't forcing his way into this sort of pick. And you know, we can talk about this in a second. But the schematically, he was taking what the Rockets were giving Oklahoma City, and he was, again, under control, disciplined, in a way that you were watching this, you're like, oh man, they really made some nice adjustments here, and he is doing Russ Westbrook things. I mean, we talk about that stat line, and it's absurd, but then you look at the 17 of 43, and it's sort of mind-boggling in the other direction. So, it was a different-looking Thunder team through three quarters, but that fourth quarter was rough.
So here's my thing.
Mm-hmm.
He was great for three quarters, and he made – it's not like he just started missing shots.
Right.
I mean, he was missing shots. He missed 14 of them in the fourth quarter. He was missing shots, but the problem was not that he was missing shots. It's not like he went cold. He changed the way that he was playing, mm-hmm. and I think part of it is yep. he has this tendency of when Billy Donovan puts him in with defensive-minded lineups without a lot of offensive firepower around him, like he had in the start of the fourth quarter in that lineup with – Sabonis and Kyle Singler out there, and he doesn't really feel like he can trust any of those guys out there offensively. He tends to start shooting like crazy. And then when the more offensive inclined guys come in, Adams comes back in with his five fouls, and mm-hmm. Oladipo comes back in. He has some more offensive weapons around him. I think it's hard for him to adjust back into that kind of first three quarters mode that he had. He tends to just keep going in those scenarios. And I think it's fair to be critical of Westbrook in this game.
Oh, of course,
like,
yeah.
There are a lot of people who like say, "Well, he's got nothing around him. How can you blame him? He's got nothing around." Here's the thing: there is no. I agree. I don't agree. There's nothing around him because there's no way you can say a guy just broke the single season record for usage rate and say that's not more on him than it is on the situation. Like
right.
otherwise. Otherwise, just take the worst team in the NBA, take the best player on that team, and he would be breaking the usage rate record every single year. Or those would be the guys who have the all-time usage rate league leaders in single season. Like, that's not what it is. That's not what this is. This is a conscious decision from the way that Russell Westbrook wants to play and from the way that he plays. And I think when you put yourself in a position to where you want to take 18 shots in a fourth quarter, you change your game to do that. You're opening yourself up to that criticism. Just like if you make those shots, and he's made so many great late shots in games.
Sure, yeah.
Just like when you make those shots, you're opening yourself up for the praise.
Yeah, and you know, that's where the people who really praise and don't want to criticize Russ, you know, that's where they find that. That's how their influence is, that they say, we've seen this before. We've seen him take these shots and make these shots and come back from huge deficits late in the game. We've seen this happen. And that's just the way he plays. That's just the style that he's always going to have. And you live with it and you die by it. It is fair to criticize a guy when, as we spoke about, there was a lot of great ball movement. And to your point, I do not like when people say he doesn't have anything around him. I think that people tend to look at a team like Houston that has a bunch of three-point shooters and Oklahoma City who really doesn't have a bunch of shooting, or at least only a select few number of guys, and sometimes you can't even have them on the floor. But to your point, yeah, it's fair. Whenever he gets into that mindset, you brought it up, like before Adams comes back in, before some of the other starters who were playing really well early in the game alongside him come back in, he's sort of turned into this like tunnel vision, that tunnel vision mode that he has, where he's going to pull up and take shots and he's going to try to draw fouls, attack the basket when there might not be a lane there. It's absolutely fair to criticize him. Look, nobody thinks that he's a crappy player. He's obviously a great player, but it's fair to criticize him when the ball movement stops, his usage rate goes up, and he's just missing a bunch of shots. He missed 14 shots in the fourth quarter alone. Victor Oladipo was second in shot attempts for the game at 14 on the Thunder. So, you know, that's a fair criticism to have. Absolutely, especially considering how well they were playing through the first three quarters.
And it wasn't just the numbers. It was the type of shots, the fact
right.
that he was being aggressive and you know, just the pull-up mid-range shots. He took seven threes in the fourth. And yeah, they were some of those came at the end when they were losing. But part of the reason he was playing so well in the first half, he took like two threes in the first half. And he was playing inside the three-point arc. And when he does that, he's so much better. He's so much of a better passer. He's a better driving kick guy. Another thing I think you need to take into account, like, for sure this is not the exact roster the Thunder wanted. This was meant to be around. Sure. This was meant to be around Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, and there's right. no question about that. But I do always like to think about Billy King is very open about the way that he built the late 90s, early 2000 76ers around Allen Iverson. Mm-hmm. He would say you had to put defense-first guys and guys who were just not going to care if they touched the ball around Iverson
sure.
because Iverson wasn't going to give it to him.
Yeah.
Russell Westbrook uses more possessions than Allen Iverson did.
That's crazy. Yeah.
And like, by a lot.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if Sam Presti does feel like he has to take that same strategy, too, that Billy King did. All right, just because you look at the trades that he's made, you look at the moves he's made. And I'm talking about post-summer moves. I'm talking about the Jeremy Grant trade. I'm talking about getting McDermott and Taj Gibson. These are guys who, from a stylistic standpoint and from a mental standpoint, don't really care if they touch the ball. Mm-hmm. McDermott's not going to play defense, but Gibson and Grant obviously are. McDermott's the spot-up shooter there who doesn't, you know, isn't going to touch the ball for more than half a second at a time.
Sure.
He's just going to spot up for the most part,
yeah.
and they're not going to post him up, even though that's a skill that he kind of has. Like, he doesn't care if he doesn't get them. Like, those are the types of guys you put around Westbrook, and there's a reason for it. It's not because he's not forced into this style. He played the style when Kevin Durant was there.
Yep.
He just didn't play it to this much of an extreme. If he wasn't giving it up to Kevin Durant, he's not giving it up to
exactly.
He's not giving yeah. it up to other guys.
Yeah, and you look at, especially when you talk about the like look at the strength of the Thunder. They're the best rebounding team in basketball. They had I am not sure what their final number was in offensive rebounding percentage, but it was like 35% tonight. I mean, it was way up there. They had a ton of offensive rebounds. They shot the ball so well in the first half. It dropped off a lot, especially in that fourth quarter. But I'm looking right now, 17 offensive rebounds. They out-rebounded them 48-37. Like, that's the strength of the team. And like you said, sometimes if you got a guy like Russ who gets in these situations where he's missing a lot of shots, you want guys that can go attack the glass and capitalize inside and get the easy shots. The problem is when you're playing a team like Houston, the easy shots, the two-pointers, don't always work that well because they were outplaying the Rockets like crazy tonight for a long stretch of the game, but they just could not pull far enough ahead. But I digress. I agree with you. I think they did a really good job post-summer. Post everything that happened with Durant, they did a really good job of bringing contributors in. But man, you know, it's really difficult to win in this league if you can't shoot threes. And what were they tonight? 7 of 30 from the 3-point line. It's tough. That's tough. And last game, they couldn't really capitalize on some really good shooting performances by guys who don't typically shoot well, or in particular Robertson. So. It's an interesting roster, and it's you can't really blame them considering the guy that left them, and they didn't really think he was going to leave them. So it's tough to blame them for that, absolutely. But I think it's actually a pretty solid comparison with Allen Iverson. But in this day and age in the NBA, it's tough to win like that.
Let's talk lineups for a second. Okay. So Billy Donovan went 12 deep. Norris Cole was not active after playing in game one. And some of these guys played, like Sabonis played 2 minutes, Sabonis played 4 minutes, Kristen played 7, Kanter played 8. So it's not like these guys are playing a ton of minutes, but they were playing at meaningful times.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep going up the list for a bench player, Singler played 10, McDermott played 14, and Jeremy Grant played 26 off the bench, playing the 4 and the 5 mostly. You know, but even like Sabonis plays 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But Adams picks up his fifth foul in the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And instead of Taj Gibson, who played 21 minutes in this game,
yeah.
instead of Taj Gibson coming in, you get Sabonis going in.
Yeah.
And I just, Taj Gibson specifically, you know, Kyle Singler playing 10 minutes really surprised me also. I'm not quite sure what Singler did tonight to warrant that. Billy Donovan said he liked the versatility of Singler mm-hmm. playing the 3 and the 4, Robertson playing the 3 and the 4, Grant playing the 4 and the 5. But man, like, you want versatility. How about Taj Gibson playing the 4 and the 5 and being able to switch onto guys and being able to guard the perimeter and guard the inside and being able to legitimately help your defense while also being a solid screen setter for Russell Westbrook on the other end. Like, 21 minutes, I'm honestly, like, this is the most surprising part of the series to me, that Taj Gibson, I thought he was going to be at least 26 to 30 minutes a game,
yeah.
And he was at 21 the first game, which was a blowout, and I was like, well, maybe he's going to gradually go forward, and I was really surprised, and I really thought he was going to get more. He was a plus 17 in this game. He was a plus 17, yeah. And in a game that they lost by 4, he was a plus 17, and I thought we were going to see more Gibson minutes, and it wasn't happening, and there were opportune moments. There were moments. It just wasn't happening.
The interesting part of that, because Billy said it in the post-game presser, that someone, it may have been you, I don't remember who it was, but asked about, you know, bringing in Sabonis instead of Gibson at that time.
That
and he
was
said,
me.
And it was you. And he said that, you know, Gibson had just come off the floor. But I'm looking at it like you are. He played 20 minutes and 47 seconds tonight. Like, I'm pretty sure that Taj Gibson would have been okay to go back in the game at that point. I mean, I know that you – and, I mean, Billy was throwing out a lot of different lineups out there early tonight. You pointed it out on Twitter, 12 deep, really quickly into the game. Like, he was mixing things up, and I saw this – we both saw this in San Antonio last year. One of the things that really propelled the Thunder in that series was that he started mixing and matching and trying different things and seeing what stuck. But – that was such a critical time because the Rockets made that run at the end of the third quarter. I'm with you. It's a little bit confusing. I think the Cantor minutes are also interesting. You know, we were wondering whether, well, Billy was wondering whether this guy could play with the, you know, with the cameras catching him saying, telling Mo Cheeks, you know, can't play Cantor. They didn't really play him very much. But regardless of that, that three-man big rotation, and obviously it's going to hurt when Steven Adams gets in foul trouble the way he did. That's going to hurt. But that three-man rotation of Adams, Gibson, and Jeremy Grant, even though Jeremy Grant negative 20 tonight and plus-minus, which is really surprising to me because I thought I saw him. It felt like he was playing well, or it felt like the team was playing well when he was in the game. So that's a little bit surprising to look at. We can't always trust the eye test, but certainly, at that juncture of the game, especially considering the momentum that the Rockets had just picked up at the end of the third quarter, I think that's an interesting move to not stick Taj back in there because Taj was having a really good game, and you can play him a hell of a lot more than 20 minutes.
I feel like they're kind of wasting a rental.
Right. Why did you bring him in?
He's a rental.
Yeah.
I mean, look, it's a good trade either way.
Sure.
He's a good player, and they brought in guys who can help. And Cameron Payne, even if he turns into a good player on Chicago, like he was never going to blossom like that behind Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
He couldn't play next to Russell Westbrook. He was never going to get more than 12 or 14 minutes alone, and he couldn't do that with a bench unit. It just wasn't his style. He was never going to be good. And they had to trade him before he was playing 14 to 18 minutes a game and shooting 35%, and his trade value was just nothing.
Right.
They'd get nothing for him. So it was if Cameron Payne becomes a good player down the line and Taj Gibson doesn't resign – then I'm not going to change, like, on that trade because I don't think that's I don't think
it's
that's
probably
fair.
Not fair. No, it
right.
Isn't. Yeah.
Cameron Payne wouldn't have become that player with the Thunder.
No,
it wasn't going to happen, and I completely believe that. But like, they brought in Taj Gibson for a reason, and I feel like
right.
One of the reasons was to help in a playoff series like this.
Yeah,
I'm just
especially against a team that
Billy didn't quite give a straight answer on that question.
I'm guessing he's probably questioning it himself. So it's kind of tough to give a straight answer
yeah,
on that. You know what I mean? Like,
you know, something I talk a lot about Billy Donovan is that one of his greatest traits as a coach also leads to one of his greatest flaws as a coach. And I say this a lot because I think Billy Donovan's a good coach, and I think he did a great job in the playoffs last year, and I think he does a good job with this team. And you kind of alluded to it. And it's that, like, last year when he found the Cantor Adams, like, the big lineups that worked
yep.
against the Spurs. And he found the small lineups that worked against Golden State in
yep.
games 3 and 4. The way he found those lineups was just by playing with stuff.
Yeah.
And then finally realizing something that worked.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of the example tonight of when that goes awry, right? This was the example of
right.
when
it's risky.
It's the same,
it's risky to do that. Yeah.
It's the same strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we're basically judging off results over process, which maybe that's the wrong thing to do. Maybe it's the wrong thing to do. I do think there are certain things, like Gibson, I really do that's a thing that I don't quite understand, and I will try my best to understand it, and I will ask it in a different way to Billy Donovan the next time I talk to him, because I do want to get a straight answer on why Taj Gibson is not playing a lot of minutes. But
do you remember what he had in the first game? Because I don't. How many minutes he had in the first?
I know 20, he didn't 20 to 21. It was like the same thing. But
and he was much better tonight than he was in game
one. He was good.
So
he was good tonight.
Yeah.
He was good, but I you know, maybe we're judging too much off of the results as opposed to off the process, because it's something that we've praised him for, mm-hmm. deservedly so, for the way that he coached in the playoffs last year. And this was the process that he gets. You know, people were wondering last year, why the heck's he playing this guy? Why the heck's he playing this guy? And then all of a sudden you get to game three, and he has kind of his small amount of evidence, which you can look at film at and you can use. You can say, okay,
right now
I know what I'm doing. And he locks into certain lineups and locks into, you know, his own version of what a rotation is. And people are like, whoa, look at what he found. This is great. And you kind of forget about what happened in games one and two, because it was all kind of a process to get there that just kind of unravels a little bit slower than maybe people would want it to. But maybe it's not possible for it to unravel quicker with the way that he does it. Maybe it's not.
I always go with, you know, let's trust that, you know, not to say trust the process, but trusting the process over trusting the results. So maybe you're right in that regard. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm just looking at this and it kind of made me, I was taken aback by it. Sabonis had 3 fouls in 2 minutes and was a -5. Like, I mean, it's tough to look at that and say, well, maybe we should try that again. You know, I mean, sometimes you can look at results and say, okay, that did not work. But who knows, man. He was definitely trying to throw some stuff against the wall in this game. Even though I felt they had a very sound strategy going in, we were talking earlier that I saw during Rockets shoot-around yesterday, Jeff Bezdelic, who is sort of the defensive coordinator, if you will, of the Rockets, was taking his team through some defensive sets, and everything was geared in setting up a wall around Russell Westbrook every time in the high pick and roll. And early on, they were dumping it inside, you know, hitting cutters, working out of the post, going away from that pick and roll, because I'm guessing, and Billy Donovan has shown that he can make adjustments, I'm guessing they figured that the Rockets were going to be waiting for that high pick and roll over and over and over again. Obviously it worked very well for a while in the game, but you can look at that and say, so that's the process. Why not stick with the process? And then you get to the fourth quarter, and this, we're going back to what we were talking about. You stick Sabonis in there. I think that was the first time he had played all night, was it not?
I think he played for like a minute earlier.
Early on. Okay. So, regardless, then things just sort of devolved. You know, we go back to the Russ mindset of starting to jack up shots, and as the Rockets are making this push back, getting all this momentum, it looked like Russell just wanted to come and hit them back right away, like with a dagger shot. That's sort of his mentality, and it, you know, whenever you're playing a team like Houston, that can sometimes come back and bite you if they start hitting their shots. If you get out of your rhythm offensively and you sort of break down on the defensive end, but to me, in situations like that, when you stick a guy in like Sabonis, who, even if he had played 1 minute earlier in the game, you clearly aren't like, we need to play this guy all the time. Like, you don't trust him thoroughly enough to have him be a regular part of your rotation. And to me, that's sort of the tough part of that quote-unquote process, is that if you're, you know, rolling a whole bunch of guys around, and obviously Russ and Victor played 41 minutes and 22 seconds apiece, if they're surrounded by guys, especially Russell, if they're surrounded by different, like a rotation of guys for a couple of minutes at a time, like, to me, that is a questionable process. And you can look at the results and say, well, damn, they were playing so well early, and then we're looking at, I don't know, how, what, 12 guys played, and a lot of them small minutes. So, you know, why are the Thunder, when things were working so well, why are they trying to, why is he still trying to throw stuff against the wall and see if it sticks? Like, I think it's fair to question. I always want to believe in the process over results, but I don't think it's unfair to question results in that capacity.
So let's talk some Rockets stuff real quick. We are Locked On Rockets.
Locked On Rockets.
Someone criticized and said we talked about the Rockets too much last time we podcasted.
And we wondered if you knew if they were playing the Rockets in a playoff series.
Yeah. Rule of thumb, when a team wins by 31, you should talk about them.
Probably. Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, so Harden was 35, 8 assists, 4 boards. Eric Gordon had a really nice shooting game off the bench. He had 3 threes. He had 22 points. Lou Williams was on fire. Lou Williams has not shot the ball well with the Rockets at all.
No, he hasn't.
Except for against the Thunder.
You know, tonight it was the bench. I mean, generally speaking, the starting lineup was really struggling. Ryan Anderson can't throw the ball in the ocean right now. Like, I don't really know what's going on there. But the bench unit, and they only play, like Billy alluded to it, they're only going to play 8 guys all game. And those 3 bench guys, man, even like there was that stretch where Capella was blocking everything at the rim, and he took him out and put in an A, and I was like, man, Capella was playing really well. But down the stretch, man, he brought in that muscle with an A. But, yeah, but between, you know, well, let's see here, 43 points between Gordon and Lou Williams. I mean, that's huge production from just 2 guys off the bench, and that's, you know, when you look at the Rockets, they don't have a real deep rotation. But the guys they do have coming off the bench, there's just so much firepower, potential firepower there, that's why they're a dangerous team. And that's why, you know, that's why when you're not capitalizing on a lead like the Thunder had, like if you can't hold on to that or you can't stretch it out a little bit further, they can come back and hit you in the face in like a few punches and they're right back in the game within a possession or two. We saw it firsthand tonight. They came back quickly. It did not take long once they started hitting those threes.
It's funny looking at the Rockets playing 8 guys. You know, playoffs come in.
Yeah.
Shorten your rotation. You know,
well, not Billy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I'm saying. You look at the Rockets and they're at 8. Then you look at the Thunder and it's like the minutes column is like a Jackson Pollock painting of just throwing stuff at it.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, you're right. I mean, typically, damn near every single team in the NBA is going to shorten their rotation to 8 or 9 guys. You know, maybe some teams that are really deep, like, you know, the Spurs, for instance, who have they've been known for their sort of bench roles. Might be a little bit different, but typically you're going to see those shorter rotations, and you want your best players to play the most minutes, and that's what, like you said, that's a good way to describe it. It looks like a Jackson Pollock painting because 4 minutes, 2 minutes, 26 minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, 13
yeah,
minutes,
just
10
throwing
minutes,
random like, stuff at the wall,
and that's yeah. I think that's sort of the frustrating part of looking at that process that. That Billy Donovan took in this game, but regardless, yeah, I mean, tonight we saw firsthand why the Rockets are so dangerous because they can come back so quickly.
Harden was great in the second half too.
Yeah, Harden was so good first half.
Like, he was so good in the second half. He had a couple of great step back threes, and he was facilitating and he was getting to the rim, and he was doing everything in the second half. He was so much better. He was not good in the first half.
No, he wasn't
by his standards, and he was great. He was great in the second half. He really played a great game. 20 free throws,
that's
which
crazy.
Jeremy Grant's reaching on him a lot. That's when I think he gets really excited when Jeremy Grant switches onto him now, because Jeremy Grant is reaching on him a lot, and he's getting a lot of fouls on Jeremy Grant when Jeremy Grant switches onto him, and I think that's something that he's excited about. He got a reaching foul from Oladipo coming around the screen. He got another one from Grant, which is like the second or third time he's done that in the first couple of games. So that's, you know,
man,
people hate watching it, and I'm with – look, fun to watch is not necessarily in line with effective.
Sure.
And a lot of those fouls, no, they're not fun to watch, but I like watching great basketball, and it's certainly effective, and it's efficient, and if you can do it, like drawing fouls is not random. It's a skill.
Oh, no.
It's not like
correct. Yeah,
people talk about the people who don't like Harden talk about you know, well, he just gets fouled a lot. It's like, yeah, okay, well, you know, like that's like saying, well, Steph Curry just makes a lot of threes. Why is he good?
Yeah,
you know?
He gets fouled because he's literally getting fouled. And he has, I mean, yeah. Look.
Why was Michael Jordan good? He just made a lot of shots.
Look, James Harden is super clever with the ball. I mean, Thunder fans know that from personal experience. I mean, that guy is so intelligent with the way, and again, it might not be pretty a lot of the times, but, and people might not like that style, but man, is he clever with the ball. The way he reaches through and goes up and under, and yeah, it's frustrating, but yeah, he had such a bad first half. He was pretty bad in that first half. And then just started hitting some dagger threes, especially that one step back at the top of the key. I think it was late in the third that cut the lead down to three, I believe it was. It's why he's an MVP candidate. I mean, plain and simple. It's tonight we saw why those two guys are generally considered the top two candidates in this MVP race, but it was Harden who made the shots down the stretch, and some of them were really tough shots, similar shots that Russ was taking. It's just, you know, he's a little bit better of a shooter, and he was making them, and Russ wasn't. And it's one thing when you're making them to keep shooting them, but if, you know, we're going back to the Russell conversation, you know, when you're not hitting them, maybe you got to take a little bit more time. Maybe you got to start moving the ball a little bit more. Maybe go back to what you were doing early in the game. But yeah, the Rockets got hot, and I've seen it time and time again with this team. When they get hot, it is so difficult to stop them because they just have shooters everywhere. I mean, all over the place. And actually, to the Thunder's credit, like 29 three-point attempts, that's 11, more than 11 below the Rockets' average. I think they average like 40 point something, whatever. So holding them to 29 tonight, 33 in game one, like, if you're looking for small victories, if you're looking for silver linings, I think that's a pretty good place to start. You just got to finish the job. And it's tough to do on the road. Obviously, Chesapeake is a tough place to play, and the Rockets know that. The Thunder are going to be really happy to get back there. I think they had a good showing tonight. They just gotta finish that thing. Especially
tonight was one they had to win.
Yeah.
Tonight was one they probably should have won, and they didn't end up doing it. And yes, they did do a good job preventing threes. They did a really good job running guys out the 3-point line,
yep,
especially in the first half. That was definitely a silver lining. They did a good job.
And they really, really fixed, like, what was the Rockets out rebounded the Thunder 56-41, I think it was, in game one. 56-41. And they righted that ship tonight. So, you know, they got back to playing the way that. You know, that makes them successful. Again, just got to finish it, but it's going to help a lot to go back home.
All right, you got anything to plug before we wrap up? Anything else to talk about?
I'll have something before game three at Real GM. If you want to go back, I don't know if Thunder fans are going to like what I wrote about Enes Kanter yesterday, but if you want to go check that out at Real GM. Be my guest. Clicks are always good, I guess.
And you're Matthew_Tynan on Twitter?
That is what I am.
All right. And I'm at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. You can also contact me, LockedOnThunder@gmail.com.
Not Locked on Rockets.
Not Locked on Rockets.
Not
doing Locked on Rockets. You can go to normantranscript.com, check out my blog there, Thunder Road, under the sports tab on the site. Going to be back with you tomorrow, talking Thunder before Friday. Friday is game three, so going to be talking Thunder before game three. And I'll be back with you again after that, but after game four, wrapping up Sunday's game four. So no podcast over the weekend, even though it's the playoffs. I'm sorry, but I will be back tomorrow.
You got to have some time to breathe, man. You got to have some time to take a break. You know what I mean?
It's true. I can't do seven of these a week. I can't do seven a week, but I will have tomorrow. Until then, Locked on Thunder is locking up.